Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
Your mornings. Your future self will thank you.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Brought to you by Zadok Jewelers. KFNC and KFNC HD2, Mont Bellevue, Houston. Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, our next guest, midfielder for the Houston Dynamos in the 80s, 1984, got to the league championship against Fort Lauderdale. Mark Lugris, a big part of that team, has spent his entire career in the game. Played for Houston, Columbus Capitals, Dallas Sidekicks, and has represented Puerto Rico in three World Cup qualifying cycles and continues to this day to influence young people. Mark Lugris joins us now. Mark, how are you?
Great, Glenn. Thank you for having me, and I love hearing Van Halen. Thank you for playing some
Buddy,
Van
that's
Halen.
Your song, Panama. I remember that from 1984. I mean, I was hoping you got the connection there.
That was awesome. That was awesome. Good to talk to you.
All right. Good to talk to you too, Mark. You have no voice, so I'm assuming that's from coaching. Tell me what you've been doing coaching-wise. Tell me what you're doing, because I know you're a coach in St. Joseph's College, and I also know you're working with a tremendous amount of youth. I mean, I know, and I can only tell my audience, the amount of passion this man has for the game, what an excellent midfielder he was. Some of the directives that he helped push the Puerto Rican soccer forward with the national team in qualifying. So just tell me what you've been doing.
I've been in youth coaching over the last probably 20 years. And right now I'm at Northport Cal Harbor United, which is one of the original teams from the Long Island Junior Soccer League. So it's a very historic club in terms of youth soccer on Long Island. And I've been working with them over the last 3 years. I started a training organization called Cantera Football, and we have about 16 very passionate coaches like me, and we work inside this club, and it's just been a great journey for us over the last 3 years, seeing the club grow and building a culture there. So it's just been wonderful.
Mark Lugris joining us, former member of the Houston Dynamos in the 80s. So we're going to say 84 because that's the year we got to a league championship. That was our best year. That was the year that we actually had a full season completed because there was so much going on. He has also been elected into the Puerto Rican Soccer Hall of Fame. All right, so, you know, when you think of the way we were playing the game, high school stadiums, NFL stadiums, and you see where Major League Soccer is now, I would even say the USL with some of the facilities, infrastructure, the amount of opportunity, what jumps out to you?
You know, I'm happy. I'm happy for the players of today that they have all these resources and that they're being treated like professionals. I think in the era that we were playing in, soccer was dying, and we helped keep it alive. So I kind of see it as our legacy, you know, as players. Like, you know, we don't have a pension or you know, there's really not a lot written about our era. But, you know, the players that were involved, like you and me, were, you know, like we see this as our legacy, as something that we helped be build and be a part of. And I'm very proud of it. I really am. It's amazing to see how many professional jobs there are. Like when we were playing, maybe there were 200, 300 professional jobs. So So you really had to fight and claw with some amazing players just to get on a roster. So
yeah, no question. No question about fighting and clawing. Man, you just really sewed that up beautifully. You know, and I even think now for players when they got done, like when we got done, it was, you know, you're probably going to jump into coaching if you want to stay connected to the game. Now it's, my God, you can go into the front office of teams. There's a whole bunch of different levels you can get experience at. You can be in coaching. You can be in marketing. You can be in sales. And I'm not just talking about Major League Soccer. I'm talking about the USL and all the differing divisions down to the PDL. And it really is remarkable because the lens that we've seen it through is both scary and good. It means we have experience. It also means we're older.
For sure. For sure. But, you know, right, listen, it's in a great place. I think it's in a great place. It's going forward and it's growing. So, you know, I think it's something that you and I should be very proud of. And listen, Tab is from our era. So yeah. You see the great job he's doing there in Houston. And, you know, it's guys like that I'm very proud of because they you know, we all walk in the same shoes. And to see him having the success, or Peter Vermes, these type of guys that we kind of grew up playing with, you know, still making a huge impact.
They were younger guys when they were breaking through, but I had some legendary games against the New Jersey Eagles when Tab and Peter Vermes were on that team. I remember Tab carving up our midfield one game. But you are right. I mean, you do root for these guys. I mean, you're rooting for them to do well, and that's a big part of it because I do get that connection. Listen, I want to get into Puerto Rico, and you know, you really worked hard in gaining attention to Puerto Rico and literally putting Puerto Rican teams together to participate in World Cup qualifying.
Yes, I mean, it was a unique situation. I had played in the 1990 qualifying games against Jamaica, which was, it was my first cycle. It was a great experience. And then I was called back in 1994, and they had played a Caribbean qualifying match in Haiti. And after that match versus Haiti, the coach was fired. 17 of the 21 players boycotted the team and said they weren't going to play unless the coach was reinstated. The federation said no. And so the few players that said yes, were left. And so something, really strange happened. In other words, Puerto Rico was going to play the opening match of the 94 World Cup, against Dominican Republic. And it was going to get a lot of media, exposure. And like BBC, like 60 newspapers covered the game. I mean, two minnows of the Caribbean, playing. But it was the first match and the kickoff to the World Cup. So the president of the federation called me. He said there was a loophole in the FIFA regulations that your passport was your player pass. So could we find players? So, you know, I had a lot of connections with in the Greek League in New York. And so we kind of were picking up the phone, calling players that we knew and asking them if they would be interested in playing in the World Cup. As absurd
incredible,
as that
sounds. Incredible, incredible story. I have to let you go, Mark, but before I let you go, do you remember the time when we were training at HBU and the Rockets would train after us? Do you remember being in the locker room in the showers and a guy coming in and saying, "Hey, you soccer guys, get out of here."
Yes,
and then Thomas Rongen yelling at Bill Fitch. Do you remember that?
I do.
For some reason, I never forget that because then we'd go out and climb into our little rabbit
angry.
Cars.
You were not happy.
No. Well, you had to tell. It's like, come on, give us some respect, for God's sake. So that's part of our story. It was very hard to get respect. And then we'd jump in our rabbits, and Hakeem and Samson would come in their Mercedes-Benz. It's classic.
Mercedes, exactly. Elijah Wan. But yeah,
you're the best.
I mean, there were good guys on that team, on that Houston Rockets team. There were a lot of good guys that we used to hang
absolutely.
Out with.
Absolutely. All right, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. You're the best. He's Mark Lugris, still doing tremendous
work.
Love you too, buddy.
Well.
All right.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye.
Mark Lugris, Puerto Rican national team captain. You heard that all the attention they got for that game because it was the first World Cup qualifier. That's pretty amazing stuff. And, boy, I'll tell you, talk about a two-way midfielder and a guy that worked every day in training. I mean, his work ethic was off the charts. Remember, he had two goals against San Jose once. Bob Rigby was in goal. He was once on the cover of Sports Illustrated, Bob Rigby. All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back. Ron Patel, president of Golden Grape Entertainment, in charge of RGB and its facilities and the Vipers, who, by the way, are affiliated with the Rockets. Ron will join us next. And looking forward to this interview. That interview will be brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They're bilingual. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. John and his firm getting soccer on the air. Thank you, John.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Jordi Sunyer in Barcelona, and you're listening to Soccer Matters.
Well, Barcelona got a 5-1 win today in the Champions League as group play began, and boy, what a day it was. A lot of great games. Messi, Coutinho, Ansu Fati getting goals in that one. By the way, I have Copa Libertadores on in the background. How many managers does Argentina produce? I mean, you know, I saw Hernan Crespo on the sideline for Defensa. You got Marcelo Gallardo now, who played 15 games for DC United back in the day, River Plate legend. He's on the sideline now. This is an incredible game between River Plate and LDU Quito in the Copa Libertadores. Clasico in 4 days between Real Madrid and Barcelona. And right now we go down to the valley. Ron Patel is the president of Golden Grape Entertainment, in charge of RGV and its facilities. And the Vipers, who, by the way, affiliated with the Rockets, I mentioned. Ron joins us now. Ron, thank you so much for coming on. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. How's it going?
Ah, there you are, Moya. My heart just dropped for a minute there, Ron. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great, thanks. How are you?
Okay, good. Let's get into it. You know, obviously, everybody here in Houston understands the connection between the Dynamo and RGV and sort of the partnership that is there. Just explain the partnership to the Dynamo fan.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, actually. So the Dynamo handle the technical side of the partnership with player management and coaches. And RGV down here, we handle the business side of it, the front office, so the tickets and the sponsorships and merchandising, and it's been around, it's the fifth year of the relationship, and the ownership down here has built an incredible facility. It's a 9,700-seat soccer-specific stadium. For Dynamo fans that haven't seen it, it's truly a beautiful piece of art. It's a beautiful stadium. I think some inspiration for parts of the stadium came from the Dynamo Stadium, and also from the San Jose Quake Stadium, I believe, too. He visited that stadium as well. So, and the practice fields that are right next to it, it's just the facilities are fantastic.
Yeah, and you're talking about your owner, Alonso Cantu. And by the way, I've watched a lot of RGV games over the years. And, yeah, it is absolutely gorgeous facilities. And I know there's tertiary facilities that make it even better. All right, so the partnership with the Dynamo is up in a year. What do you think the future is going to hold with the partnership? You know, because in a way, you have two different desires. You're trying to be a pro team in your market, and the Dynamo, you know, it's about player development and accelerating the development of their players. What do you think the future holds, and what do you think will go down in the future, and how hard has it been kind of to meld these two things together? Because it can't be easy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say what the future holds, right? But I think it's been a really challenging year with COVID. It's restricted the ability to move players back and forth for obvious reasons. And I came in, I just moved down here in February from New Mexico. And so I was here about a month and then COVID hit. So learning, it's been easy to learn the relationship because the guys over the Dynamo are very easy to work with. And I enjoy working with them. So we've been going at it now, and we had the first game at home, and then we had the big break, and then we came back to the other games. But I think we're trying to figure out how to get through this next year, not knowing, you know, not having a crystal ball, not knowing what it's going to be like for player movement, not knowing what it's going to be like for scheduling. And, you know, a lot of the travel this year in the USL was regional, which obviously cuts costs down, but there's also complications when you put guys on a bus if you're traveling local, you know, short term. And you have some, you know, something happens where a positive case of COVID comes up. So we're just trying to focus on how to make this next year work, and then we'll go from there.
You and I had a wonderful discussion, and we're talking to Ron Patel. He's the president of Golden Grape Entertainment in charge of RGV. You have some history in soccer that a lot of people didn't know. I certainly didn't know, and I'm really glad that we've reached out and connected because it's certainly been educational for me. You headed up the Albuquerque Soul of the PDL, then the USL Championship team called New Mexico United, which, by the way, averaged 12,693 fans. So tell me how you did that in New Mexico.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been around the game my whole life. I was born a mile from Anfield, and I am a proud Red. So it was a good year for Liverpool when the Premier League finally finished. I've been around the game my whole life and did odd jobs out of college, started my own business, was a business owner for 10 years, and then got into sports. So kind of the unconventional route into sports. Saw a gap in the marketplace that there really wasn't a high level of soccer outside of the university there, which had a great program, unfortunately, until just a couple of years ago when it got cut. And we started an amateur, semi-professional, whatever you're going to call it, PDL team, which is now called USL League 2, called Albuquerque Soul. And then did that for 4 or 5 years. The goal was always to move professionally. And, you know, some things changed. We learned along the way the USL grew a ton. When I started, it was the upper tier with 12 teams. Then by the time we bought the franchise for New Mexico United, it was up to 36 teams in just four and a half years. And it happened so fast. And people ask me all the time, like, how did you guys do it? What did you guys do that was so great? And the secret sauce is non-existent, really. It was the people of New Mexico that did it. I think we just empowered them, and we gave them the tools and resources to come together in a forum, which was soccer. And we were, I tell my people here, I'm like, we were genuine, authentic, and intentional with everything that we do. And if you're not genuine, people can see right through it. You have to be authentic to the market that you're in, and you have to be intentional with everything that you do. And so I think we did a really good job of activating the entire state of New Mexico, going as far as Farmington, which is 3.5 hours to the northwest, to Roswell, 4 hours to the southeast. And when I say going, I was part of the team going out there. But we also surrounded ourselves with incredibly talented and passionate people that loved the state of New Mexico. And some of them didn't even know soccer coming into the job, but they were so crazy about New Mexico and saw the buzz about the team. And I think there was a lot of things we did well, but there's no way we would have the success we had if it wasn't for the amazing fans and the amazing people of New Mexico that came together. And things I always tell people is they weren't coming to the games at first for soccer. They were coming for New Mexico because they had something to cheer about for a state that's often overlooked. And then when they came, we turned them into soccer fans when they got that game day experience. But there was a palpable energy you could feel at every game. You know it. You've been to games all over the place. There was this energy you could feel. It was electrifying. It was special, and I'm so proud to have been a part of that team that brought that to New Mexico.
Such an incredible story. And you know, we sometimes overlook the USL, at least because of Major League Soccer. You know, everybody goes to the top league, but there's amazing stuff going on in these other markets. And that became, you know, this is a big deal to the people of New Mexico and your market. And you said you kind of had to lead them to water, but it sounded like you gave them a tremendous amount of room for organic growth as well.
Yeah, it had to be organic for it to work. I think when you look at, you know, I'm going to speak from the business side now. When you look at the people that aggregate to soccer, it's this younger generation, dare I say the word millennial. I know people of that age group don't like to be called that. But, you know, they people that age don't pay for widgets; they pay for experiences. So I think if you have a successful product in Saki, it's got to be an experience and something that's memorable, because you always remember how you feel after a big game. We've all got those memories of those games that were electrifying, and that goal that came in stoppage time, or that penalty shootout that we ended up winning. And I just being a Liverpool fan my whole life, I've had lots of great memories there. I've followed other teams in the United States, and then but New Mexico United last year, there's just so many memories that I'll never forget. And then even this year, like just being able to battle through COVID here in RGV, and just so yes. many, the deck was stacked against us, and to be able to battle through, and we had such a tough year on the field, and then those last two games, the players, all it was really missing was the fans, because the last two games we brought our fans back, and social distance and very limited capacity, it was less than 10% of the stadium, but we won the last two games, and the feeling was just, the players just left it all out there, and you know what I'm talking about. Those you can't replace.
Yeah, I watched those two games. It was a tremendous way to end the year. You needed those wins desperately, and I think it was just a positive lift at the end of the season. You made a really interesting point about the New Mexico market, and you kind of had to lead the way there, and then kind of step back and let it become the New Mexico thing. But you're in a market that has a tremendous amount of competition with Liga MX fans. This is different for you. So how do you, how in a Cliff Notes version do you attack that?
Yeah, you can tell I like to talk a lot. I like that. I see a lot of parallels between New Mexico and the Valley. I think there's a lot of similarities, and I'm not just talking about the high Hispanic population. I'm just saying that, it's an area, New Mexico is an area that's often overlooked. I think people from the Valley feel like this area is overlooked. New Mexico, you would call a call center and get transferred to the international department. And it's funny to laugh about, but then when it happens to you over and over again, you build up this chip on your shoulder. And so I've seen what soccer can do in Liverpool when growing up as a kid. I've seen what it's done in New Mexico now. And I look at the Valley and I think that, the Valley is, a lot of people don't realize how fast it's growing. The economy here is booming. It's really good. And I know COVID's dampered things a little bit, but they will bounce back here. It's a hard working culture. People work their butts off down here, and they like to enjoy themselves, like to enjoy their football on the weekends. And so it's my job really to work with our partners at Dynamo to do the best thing. I think there's a ton of things I could have done better this year. You always got to look yourself in the mirror, say, what could I have done better as a leader of this club? And I'm working on myself and working on my club and trying to make it the best thing possible for years to come for the Valley. We have to make sure that we make them proud.
The Valley, and I've heard it's remarkable, and the growth's remarkable. I have a friend who's a wine distributor, and he goes down there and I guess is selling a lot of Spanish wine and also Lustau vermouth. He has told me a lot of really good things about the Valley. The MLS Reserve League now coming, is that, how do you even feel about that? I know there's not a lot known about it yet, but is that going to make some changes for USL teams?
I don't know yet, right? I don't know a ton about it. We've obviously all read the rumors. It's usually broken by Jeff Reuter on Twitter or someone else. I think we all know it's coming. And Reserve League, I think it's probably more like a U23 league, so it's probably more of a competitor to the PDL, League 2. But I haven't put a lot of thought into it, just because I love the partnership that we have. We're able to see, the players we have are so talented. Now they are at the beginning of their career, so they're still here to learn the experience and I think, pick up the minutes that they value, that are valuable and that they need to get going. But I haven't put a lot of thought into that league yet. But I'm just, again, focused on how do we build, and culture starts from the inside out. And that's one thing that was done right from the get-go in New Mexico, was the internal culture was there. I look at our club down here, how can I improve the internal culture, and then it can improve on the outside too. So, I know that doesn't probably directly answer your question. I just haven't put a lot of thought into that league.
Yeah, no. And listen, you're only 9 months on the job, so we got to give you a break here. But, when you report to your owner, Alonso Cantu, I'm assuming he wants this team to be a success. He wants people going to the games, and I understand it's COVID now. He wants this team to be a hot commodity and a great entertainment source for everybody in the Valley. And, that's kind of your job, right?
It's absolutely my job, and And, you know, if there's a way to do it, like, I'd love to be able to say that when you look at the play on the field and you look at the experience you have in the stadium, that we represent the Valley and look like the Valley. And I still don't know exactly what that looks like, because I feel like we did that. When you went to a New Mexico game, Sacramento Republic do a great job of this in the USL as well. It's everything Sacramento when you go to a Sacramento Republic game. You walk in, they've got the local craft beer, they've got the food trucks, they've got everything about Sacramento. One thing they said at a league meeting one time is game day starts when you leave your parking lot, and it ends when you leave your driveway, and it ends when you return home from the game. So what can you do to fill that whole day with that experience, whether that's tailgate experience, whether that's whatever? You know, we had great tailgates in New Mexico. There was thousands of people that would tailgate for our games. And again, that was the fans. We didn't do that. That was organic. So you can't replace that stuff. So I'm hoping to inspire our own movement here in the Valley. It's not about taking what I did in New Mexico with the great team there and duplicating here. It's about how do I do it right the Valley way, and that's the way it'll be truly, truly valuable and truly savored by the fans, and again, genuine, authentic, intentional, and that's what I'm always working on.
Give me two things that would be genuine Valley.
Genuine Valley. So I've been doing a lot of listening. I've been asking a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think genuine Valley is, so down here, a lot of people tell me that, you know, we're somewhere between Texas and Mexico. We don't speak English. We don't speak Spanish. We speak Spanglish. So I'm trying to figure out how do we incorporate Spanglish into the game day experience, right? There's things that we can do that my marketing team has come up with some really cool ideas. So that would be something that's very valuable. How do you incorporate Spanglish into it? I think also just representing
that
the
means
people,
I could fit
a,
in. I could fit in the Valley, Ron. I could fit in the Valley. I speak great Spanglish.
You speak Spanglish. Good tacos down here everywhere too. Really good tacos.
I heard.
But I think just like. It's a hardworking culture, man. People down here work 6 days a week. I was so pleasantly surprised by it. You know, people don't just stand around. If they need money, and during COVID, people would lose their jobs. They would just go find something else to do. They'll be selling something else the next day. They don't sit around and cry about it and that they lost their job. Not that I'm like downplaying losing your job, because that's horrible. But people here just get right back up on their feet and they go work hard. And
Boy, we need to do that as a club.
We,
yeah.
It's great. It's so great to see that.
And you can wrap yourself around that one.
Whew. Yep, exactly. So I guess that's what I mean by being Valley. And there's more. Yeah. I'm still learning, right? I'm still asking questions, meeting people, connecting with the right people. It's been tough, obviously, during a pandemic. So.
Understood. All right, listen, I'm going to have to go now, Ron, but fantastic interview, really insightful stuff. I think everybody who listened to this interview really loves it. So thank you so much for that. I love the use of the word authentic, and thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you. And Dynamo fans, we try to do a friendly every year, so we would love to have you come down and check out the facilities and come check out the great food of the Valley and come have a good time, and we'll share a pint and enjoy soccer together.
All right, there he goes. Ron Patel, president of Golden Grape Entertainment, in charge of RGV and its facilities and the Vipers affiliated with the Rockets. Great stuff from Ron there. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Ari Lasseter of the Houston Dynamo, the son of the former great Roy Lasseter. And this segment coming up is going to be brought to you by NB Elite Realty. Nebo Bandovic, the former hotshot striker. Well, he finished his soccer career, went on to build a real estate investing empire. You follow him at Nebo, at Nebo Bandovic, NEBANDOVIC, on Instagram for daily investment tips, secrets, and more information. How to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program. At Nebo Bandovic, NEBOBANDOVIC, on Instagram. We'll take a break. It's a loose style break. Also brought to you by John Daspit and the Daspit Law.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Hi, this is Oliver Luck, and you're listening to Soccer Matters on 97.5 with the irrepressible Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters, our final segment of the show tonight. Hey, it's brought to you by NB Elite Realty. Real estate agents, are you tired of paying high commission splits to your broker? At NB Elite Realty, you'll get 100% of your hard-earned commission at closing. They offer low transaction fees, free investment training, exceptional support, no hidden fees. Visit the website, nbelitereality.com. Next player, well, he is a Houston Dynamo striker. He has 2 goals, came off the bench dramatically against Minnesota on his first appearance for the Houston Dynamo. It was his debut. 2 assists from Albert Elise. He is the son of the legendary Roy Lassiter. He is Ari Lassiter, who joins us now. Ari, thank you very much for coming on the program.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Well, let's talk about what was an amazingly long day yesterday. Dynamo come off a 2-2 draw in Minnesota. Great comeback effort in that one. But just take us through the day, because you fly out to Minnesota. You don't get home until about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, with all the, you know, the COVID and all the protocols that we have to do now, and with such little games, or with a lot of games in such little time, it's really difficult, you know, for all the teams. And we have to travel the same day as we play, which is not very common at all. You know, it's early morning, you know, two and a half hour flight, almost 3 hours to Minnesota. We don't get too much downtime once we get there, and it's kind of go, go, go from the time we wake up until the time we get back. And, like you said, we got back around 2:30 in the morning, and then training again. So it's a different process. It's a difficult process. It's something that we have to, you know, that we've, I wouldn't say gotten used to. But it's the situation that we're in today. So
is it strange with the limited fans and all? Do you feel a sense of isolation even though you're playing these games and you know they're on television?
Yeah, it's definitely very different. I don't mind not having fans or having fans. Obviously, having fans is so much better, and it brings a different aspect to the game. And you know, that's the part that everyone loves is that atmosphere. But at the end of the day, you know, when I'm on the pitch, it's almost like, you know, fans and whoever's outside of the field doesn't really exist, just because, you know, I'm just focused in what I have to do. But at the end of the day, it definitely would be really nice to have those fans in the stands.
So I've heard a lot of commentators, and we're talking to Ari Lassiter and pundits and people in the game and even the players. Do you have to dig deeper for motivation without fans there and the home fan? You know, because I was in two places in the beginning. I was like, look, these are pros. They go out. They're doing their business. But then the more and more I heard people talking about, well, you know, maybe there's lack of motivation because there are no fans there. Do you buy that? How do you feel about that?
That's a difficult question to answer, because I think everybody's different, and that'll change and vary person to person or player to player. In my point of view, at the end of the day, you know, I just want to win. I want to win every single game. So for me, that, you know, that's not, that doesn't really matter. I think they definitely help in certain situations where, you know, you may need a late goal or you're holding on to a lead, and the fans can definitely help and motivate you and push you to, you know, to finish off those last 10, 15 minutes of the game or what have you. But at the end of the day, for me personally, it doesn't play a huge factor.
Talking to Ari Lassiter of the Houston Dynamo, Alajuelense, one of the big clubs in South America, in Central America and Costa Rica, in the first division where you played. Tell me about playing there, what it was like playing there and scoring goals in the first division, and what it was like playing in Costa Rica. This is the country that you were born in.
Right, right. I mean, I was born there, and it's definitely a different, it's a different beast. You know, the fans and the people are extremely demanding of not only the club but the individual players. You know, I was in a top club there, and it was pressure every single game to win and perform well. But the fans were great. The teams were really good. Different style of players, maybe not as athletic as the players you may find here in the MLS, but all the players in Costa Rica were extremely technical. It was a pretty tactical game as well, and kind of end to end. But I think I gained a lot of my experience. You know, I think you gain a lot by playing, and you know, I needed that at that point in time and in my career. And so now it's time to, you know, use what I've learned and try to continue to get better and hopefully continue to be with the Costa Rican national team as well.
So talk to me about that healthy pressure you got down there, because I think we all need it, and no matter what job we're in, we need a level of healthy pressure. How strong was it down there? And were there some games where maybe you didn't perform and you really heard it from the fans in a big way?
Oh, yeah. You know, if you didn't perform well, you would hear it immediately. You know, even our own fans and stands may say things, and, you know, to a player or even to myself. But, you know, I definitely think it's part of the passion that the people in Costa Rica have for the game. And especially when it's a big club, they demand the best out of each individual person, whether it's the coaching staff or players. Sometimes it wasn't healthy motivation, but it definitely makes you want to bring your A game every single night. And I think that goes a long way.
Talking to Ari Lassiter about playing in Costa Rica, played for Alajuelense. And if I take you a little deeper into that, take us through a moment and maybe paint a picture of a great moment that you remember scoring a goal in Costa Rica in the first division, and just maybe take us through it. Maybe it's against the rival, maybe it's on the road. Just take us through a moment there, and maybe you can pull us into what it's like playing in the Costa Rican first division.
Yeah, I think one of the big moments for me was playing against Saprissa, which is another big club in Costa Rica and Central America, our rival. It was an away game, and we ended up winning the game 5-2. I ended up scoring two goals back-to-back, and that kind of led us to win the game. And, you know, those rivalry games are always intense, and it was pre-COVID, so the fans – you know, they were always against us, of course, when we went over there. And it was really, I would say the atmosphere playing games like that over there is almost like, you know, what you see in Europe. Sometimes, you know, you could feel the stadium shake and move and the fans chanting throughout the entire game, and all the fans, not just, you know, their supporter section, but the entire stadium chanting. And so it's really cool. And it was really nice to do it on their field and to kind of quiet the crowd. And so that part was fun. And I think that was definitely a big moment in my career and a big moment for me playing in Costa Rica.
So your dad, we all know your dad. Of course, I've commentated on a lot of his games over his career. Your father, Roy Lassiter, was a tremendous goal scorer, exciting, dynamic player. You have a lot of the same qualities as your father. How much does dad talk to you? And how much did dad help you with playing in Costa Rica? Because your father also obviously had a stint in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I mean, he was always telling me that, you know, he truly learned about the game when he went to Costa Rica. And, you know, looking at it now, I would have to agree, because I think all of my development that I've had in the short amount of time that I was in Costa Rica has, you know, pushed me a really long way. And, you know, my father and I, we always talk about the game. We always talk about, you know, where I can get better, how I can get better, you know, what I can do more of. So there's really not a point in time in the day when him and I don't interact about soccer in general.
Does that make for a great relationship with you and your father, that you have such a deep connection with the game, that you both played at the pro level, that, you know, your dad can say, look, I was in that situation once. Here's what I did.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, that's exactly what it is. And honestly, it's been a true blessing for me to have somebody that's off the field that has been at such a high level, that watches my games and, you know, understands, you know, the style of play, my style of play, and can correct me, you know. And it's always a tough criticism as well. You know, he never sugarcoats anything, and he just tells me honestly, hey, you know, you need to do this, this, and this better, or you can continue to do this, this, and this. And so, and I always listen with open ears, because I know everything that he's telling me is true, and he just wants me to continue to get better and better and help the team and to win games. And so honestly, it's been a true blessing, and him and I have a fantastic relationship.
Talking to Houston Dynamo's Ari Lassiter about playing in Costa Rica. By the way, I've been in that Saprissa game and called the game in that press box, and every time they scored, his press box started moving, and I thought I was going to be a part of a Central American stadium disaster. And I was like, please, don't score again. The Purple Monster was banging in goals the night I was there. So it was a great memory, too. But the intensity is amazing, and the wave of fans that came down the street before the game. So for you to go in there and score two goals in a 5-2 victory, that's something else. All right, so let's take you into the Dynamo now. You've played in a variety of roles. You played on the left to bring the team with. You played as a center forward. And you're playing a lot on the right as kind of an inverted winger. I'm assuming being left-footed, that's a tough role and a differing role.
Yeah, you know, to an extent, it is different. I honestly prefer being there because, you know, I like to be able to make my runs inside and try to get in behind as well. It's always challenging going down the line and crossing with, you know, with your quote-unquote weaker foot. But it definitely gives me a chance to be a little bit more dynamic in a 1v1 where I can go inside or outside. And like you said, playing as a striker as well. I think the guys in the midfield have good vision, and when the team is really clicking on all cylinders, it's easy to find those gaps in behind and into space. If not for me to receive the ball, then it's to open up space for other players coming into the game.
So that whole, the inverted winger thing, I mean, the idea is if you cut in on your left, you're putting people in positions where they got to make decisions on how to deal with you. If they go with you inside, you're creating space for your outside back, right?
Right, exactly.
So your relationship with either Jose Bizama or Zarek Valentin, that's a big one, right?
Yeah, it's a critical battle. You know, it's you know, the outside back and myself versus the other outside back and the other winger. So it's kind of a 2v2 battle on that wing.
Yeah. How mental is it? How much of that is a mental game? Because, you know, I watch you. You have to do a tremendous amount of running. You're going box to box. You're back defending. Then you got to get in the attack and support people and join in and be an option. This is a tremendous amount of running.
Right. It's definitely a lot, especially in a league like this where sometimes it can be back and forth and the spaces are open and you have to try to take advantage of that. But at the same time, it is a bit of a chess match in when, you know, when to run into the spaces, when to pop into the gaps, you know, when to, you know, beat your player, you know, try to go 1v1 or, you know, you try to wall pass the next time around them or you play a simple one touch pass. So it just depends on the moment of the game, but it's definitely all a mental game. Majority of the game is played with your mind and not so much your feet.
Ari Lassiter joining us. Now, I remember watching a lot of the video of you on the Galaxy and then Galaxy 2. Excuse me. And you scored a lot of goals from a central area, I noticed. And I remember that little run you made against Minnesota, that little curled-off run to pull off the center back, and it was just absolutely beautiful. And Albert Elise found you. Talk to me about what it was like out in Los Angeles, because they had all those high-profile strikers. It probably was hard for you to get minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it was. I don't mind playing on the wing. I like playing on the wing, and I think it suits my qualities. But I also like playing, you know, that nine or playing alongside somebody, especially a player like, you know, Mauro. That's you know, a quality player all around. You know, he can do so much. But playing up top and you know, playing at the Galaxy was really difficult because, you know, when I came in, Robbie Keane was still there. Then you had Giassi Zardes, and then you had Ibrahimovic. So it was almost extremely difficult to break into that nine role at the Galaxy. I definitely learned a lot through the players that came in and left. So I definitely think that was kind of a learning point for me. And then going to Costa Rica was putting it into practice. And now coming back to the MLS, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, put all the pieces together.
Ari, listen, I want to thank you very much for coming on. I want to wish you continued success with the Dynamo. Enjoy watching you play the game. And keep it up, and best of luck against Columbus this coming Saturday. And thank you very much for taking the time out. It was very interesting to hear about where your career has been, where it's going, and it continues to trend upward. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Glenn. Appreciate that a lot.
That does it tonight for Soccer Matters. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters each and every week. Also to Nebo Bandovic and NB Elite Realty. It's nbelitereality.com. Also, Lustau Vermouth. Ask for it at your local liquor store. Lustau, L-U-S-T-A-U, wonderful in gin and tonics, and over ice with tonic water or club soda. And then finally, Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway in the Marquee Entertainment Center. Get over there, see Peter and the guys. Liverpool supporters group hang out there. Hugh O'Connor, 7620 Katy Freeway. For Aaron Raybould, for Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis on behalf of the firm. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, our podcasts at podcastarena.com, Spotify, and on iTunes.
ESPN 97.5.
Hi, everyone. This is James and Dan. We are two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. Every week, we sit down behind some microphones and share with each other the best things we've found out over the last 7 days.
Yes. So, for instance, Dan, did you know that you cannot tie a knot in four dimensions?
I knew that's where I was going wrong. Interesting.
There are all sorts of reasons why, but we would go into them all on our podcast, along with loads of extra facts as well.
That's right. And if you want to check it out, No Such Thing as a Fish is available wherever you get your podcasts.